Let's read in God's most holy word in the Old Testament, in the book of Joshua, and there at chapter 8, the 8th chapter of the book of Joshua. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged." That was after the valley of Achor, the valley of trouble, where Achan and his people were destroyed because of their sin. "Take the whole army with you," for it is only part of the army that had gone up to Ai, and they had been chased. "And go up and attack Ai, for I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. You shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king, except that you may carry off their plunder and livestock for yourselves. Set an ambush behind the city." And the ambush is one of the questions that we will have to raise later on. Notice it then. So Joshua and the whole army moved out to attack Ai. He chose 30,000 of his best fighting men and sent them out at night with these orders. Listen carefully. "You are to set an ambush behind the city. Don't go very far from it. All of you be on the alert. And I and all those with me will advance on the city, and when the men come out against us as they did before, we will flee from them. They will pursue us until we have lured them away from the city, for they will say they are running away from us as they did before. So when we flee from them, you are to rise up from ambush and take the city. The Lord your God will give it into your hand. When you have taken the city, set it on fire. Do what the Lord has commanded. See to it you have my orders." Then Joshua sent them off, and they went to the place of ambush and lay in wait between Bethel and Ai to the west of Ai. And undoubtedly the reason why the ambush was set there was not only that they might rise and take the city of Ai, but also that they might prevent the people of Bethel supporting the people of Ai. But Joshua spent that night with the people down in Gilgal, their campsite. Early the next morning, Joshua mustered his men, and he and the leaders of Israel marched before them to Ai. The entire force that was with him marched up and approached the city and arrived in front of it. They set up camp north of Ai, with the valley between them and the city. Joshua had taken about 5,000 men and set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai to the west of the city. They had the soldiers take up their positions, all those in the camp to the north of the city and the ambush to the west of it. That night Joshua went into the valley, Gilgal. Then the king of Ai saw this, he and all the men of the city, he and all the men of the city hurried out early in the morning to meet Israel in battle at a certain place overlooking the Arabah. That's the great depression of the Jordan below sea level. But he did not know that an ambush had been set against him behind the city. Joshua and all Israel let themselves be driven back before them, and they fled toward the desert. All the men of Ai were called to pursue them, and they pursued Joshua and were lured away from the city. Not a man remained in Ai or Bethel who did not go after Israel. They left the city open and went in pursuit of Israel. Then the Lord said to Joshua, Hold out towards Ai the javelin that is in your hand, for into your hand I will deliver the city. So Joshua held out his javelin toward Ai. As soon as he did this, the men in the ambush rose quickly from their position and rushed forward. They entered the city and captured it and quickly set it on fire. The men of Ai looked back and saw the smoke of the city rising against the sky, but they had no chance to escape in any direction, for the Israelites who had been fleeing toward the desert had turned back against the pursuers. For when Joshua and all Israel saw that the ambush had taken the city and that smoke was going up from the city, they turned round and attacked the men of Ai. The men of the ambush also came out of the city against them, so that they were caught in the middle with Israelites on both sides. Israel cut them down, leaving them neither survivors nor fugitives. But they took the king of Ai alive and brought him to Joshua. When Israel had finished killing all the men of Ai in the fields and in the desert where they had chased them, and when every one of them had been put to the sword, all the Israelites returned to Ai and killed those who were in it. 12,000 men and women fell that day, all the people of Ai. That was, of course, fulfilling the prophecy in Genesis to Abraham, that the iniquity of the Amorites in the land of Canaan was not yet full, but now its iniquity obviously was full and ready to be punished. For Joshua did not draw back the hand that held out his javelin until he had destroyed all who lived in Ai. But Israel did carry off for themselves the livestock and plunder of the city, as the Lord had instructed Joshua. So Joshua burned Ai and made it a permanent heap of ruins, a desolate place to this day, that is to the day of writing. He hung the king of Ai on a tree and left him there until evening. At sunset, Joshua ordered them to take his body from the tree and throw it down at the entrance of the city gates, and they raised a large pile of rocks over it, which remains to this day of writing. Then Joshua built on Mount Ebal. That was quite a journey, perhaps 20 miles up the plateau of Judea to the border between Judea and Samaria. Then Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the Israelites. We'll look at the place where that was commanded later on. He built it according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones on which no iron tool had been used. On it they offered to the Lord burnt offerings and sacrificed fellowship offerings. That's to say, they fed on the sacrifices. There in the presence of the Israelites, Joshua copied on stones the law of Moses which he had written. All Israel, aliens, that is those who had come from Egypt who were not Israelites, and citizens alike with their elders, officials, and judges were standing on both sides of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, facing those who carried it, the priests who were Levites. Half of the people stood in front of Mount Gerizim, and half of them in front of Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had formerly commanded when he gave instructions to bless the people of Israel. This, of course, between those two mountains, the pass that led through to the city of Samaria, is the place to the north of Jerusalem that is in constant turmoil today because of the Arabs. This very place. And visitors, tourists, may scarcely go near the city there. It is so dangerous. Afterwards, Joshua read all the words of the law, the blessings and the curses, just as is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded that Joshua did not read to the whole assembly of Israel, including the women and children and the aliens who lived among them. Amen. May God bless to us his most holy word, and to his name be praise and glory. Joshua chapter 8. Because of Achan's sin, compounded by the complacency of Israel after the walkover at Jericho, Joshua and the people suffered a great and grievous defeat. But it was good for them, nonetheless, because by it they learned a great lesson. And we might well at this point ask ourselves this question: would we ever learn moral and spiritual lessons if it were not for our humiliating failures? We need to be humbled. That's the truth. The sore truth. We need to be humbled. But you see, if we were really inured to the lifestyle of the cross of Jesus, and were really constantly living the death, resurrection life of the Lord Jesus Christ, we would not need these hurtful and humiliating lessons. But we do. And of course that is a counsel of perfection. And alas, we cannot attain it yet. But we should approximate to it more and more as we grow in grace and understanding, shouldn't we? Learn from our mistakes. What an awful thing not to learn from our mistakes. Well then, the fact that the judgment fell on Achan and his family and not on Israel indicates that the primary sin was not Israel's complacency, but Achan's covetousness, defying the Lord's ban on Jericho's treasures. Now that has a very solemn lesson to teach us, as we saw last week in the painful story of Achan. The lesson that the sin of one can affect a whole nation, which is terrifyingly challenging. The sin of one person can affect a whole nation. And also, and this is curious, that the connection between the primary sin and its secondary consequence, Israel's complacency, the connection had a hidden, seemingly remote, but vital connection with it. You see, we need to remember this, that we belong together as in our common humanity, also in the solidarity of our fallenness and sin. We belong in our humanity and we belong in our sinfulness. And we affect each other. And we have no idea We can have no idea where the invisible waves of our influence, the invisible waves of our spiritual influence, for good or ill, may reach others, tell a lie in this country, and people may be affected in Australia or Alaska. Radio, you know, should have taught us this long ago, shouldn't it? That we may not only affect others by sound and vision in remote places by what we do, but we may project moral and spiritual health or harm to others by our most private actions. What you do in the closet may affect others, will affect others. What a minister is in private tells when he gets into the pulpit. If anybody knows that, I know it. And if I'm not right with God when I ascend those steps, then God will take away all the power and all the influence. And not a word will be heard. It's as serious as that. Achan stole, and Israel became piously complacent and was defeated. That's the truth, in simple terms. Now, you can't see the logical connection between these two events. But the spiritual connection is obvious. Apply that to what I've just said. No one might know if I had grieved the Lord before coming to church this morning. But if the Lord deserted me and I had to struggle to preach the word on my own without his help, somebody would say, "What to do with the minister today?" You wouldn't know, but you would know. You see that? And what must concern us here today is the ruse, the stratagem that Israel used to baffle and vanquish Ai. Was it fair to gain victory by deceit? I think we have to be very careful here. Just as God did not need Rahab to tell the lie about hiding the spy, nor did David need to act the madman when Achish, king of Gath, challenged him. You remember that incident? Neither did Joshua need to adopt the ruse, the stratagem of setting an ambush. That was surely Joshua introducing guile into his methods. God never needs that. You wouldn't catch Jesus saying or doing a thing like that, would you? Not Paul. But nevertheless, God uses sins when they have been committed, although he doesn't approve of them. Hence, as I was saying to the little ones, and I'd love them to understand it as well as you, hence the scandal of the cross for our salvation. Great, isn't it? Great. Oh, the wisdom of God. Amen. All right then, seeking corroboration of this view that I've presented to the children and now to you, I found to my astonishment that Matthew Henry approved Joshua's stratagem, because he says Joshua did not overtly lie to the Aiites. Matthew Henry, value so highly, and stood outside the church in Chester where you ministered so long, the fruit of which is in your commentary of the whole Bible. Matthew Henry, I cannot accept that. It was by deceit that AI was taken, and I don't think it needed to be taken by deceit. And with Israel's army of many thousands, it would have been possible to overwhelm the comparatively small, although important, city of Ai by more direct means. Of course, if direct means of assault had been taken, Joshua might have lost some of his men in battle. But that, even that, wouldn't justify the guileful strategy he adopted. Matthew Henry says God appointed it. I don't read it like that. God said to take the whole army and attack Ai, and the Lord would give it into their hands. But according to my reading of verses 3 to 7, it was Joshua's idea to adopt the stratagem, as it was his idea to send the spies into Jericho. I read here, so Joshua and the whole army moved out to attack Ai. He chose 30,000 of his best fighting men and sent them out at night with these orders. Listen carefully. You are to set an ambush behind the city. Don't go very far from it. All of you be on the alert. I and all those with me will advance in the city, and when the men come out against us as they did before, we will flee from them. They will pursue us until we have lured them away from the city, for they will say, they are running away from us as they did before. So when we flee from them, you are to rise up from ambush and take the city. The Lord your God will give it into your hand. All right. Well, Matthew, you can take it that way if you like. I don't. Anyway, as to the facts of the strategy, the ambush was cunningly set to the west of Ai, so that it served the double purpose of withstanding the men of Bethel so far, should they interfere, and then that they might rise, the ambush might rise, and enter the city and destroy it. It worked, of course, and Ai was taken and liquidated completely, which was what God had promised, indeed what through Abraham he had commanded long term. He gives victory, even if our methods are not all up to his perfect standards, because he's gracious and knows our weakness. Yes, he knows our weakness. Well then, if God waited to work, until we were all perfect, to work only with perfect servants, he would wait in vain, wouldn't he? And he would have to send either for the holy angels to help him, as sometimes he has done, or he might have to send for the disembodied souls of the redeemed in heaven. But I don't think they would be much use on earth just now, do you? But don't forget this, by the way. When you think that thought inspired this one, don't forget this, that when you think of our loved ones with the Lord, talking about disembodied souls, they are only half themselves now. The better half, certainly, with the Lord in heaven, but only half. They are not yet fully, how will I put it, they are not yet fully kitted out for their new life in heaven, and won't be until Christ's second advent. Because, you see, they haven't the resurrection bodies yet, which they will have, ultimately. In heaven, that's the intention. Is it a thought to some that we are to have bodies in heaven? Jesus has a body in heaven. And Jesus is the first one. But there will be many, many more, even all of us believers. Now, whether this means that there will be a spatial dimension in heaven, or indeed in the new earth, I don't know. But I'm sure it is going to be far more. Our life in heaven, our glorified life in heaven with resurrection bodies, is going to be far more substantial than we often imagine. We think of it too ethereally, you see, not substantially enough. Well, look at it this way. If the invisible created the visible, must not the invisible be more substantial than the visible? The writer to the Hebrews tells us that at the beginning of chapter 11 and 3. It was the invisible that created the visible. Surely it must be more substantial than the visible that it made. You see? All right then, Ai and Bethel then being liquidated, the way was clear for Israel to mount the plateau of Judea. Now to understand many of the lessons in the Bible, you need to know something about the topography, the geography, if you like, of the Holy Land. Take that strip that we call the Holy Land, Palestine, and take it in four strips. There's the coastal strip. There's the foothills of the Judean Ridge mounting up, and the Judean Ridge is about 2,700 feet above sea level. Then down the other side, from 2,700 feet at the highest point, 2,700 feet above sea level, you go down to 1,200 feet below sea level. You see. So remember that they had climbed from practically 1,200 feet below sea level to well over 2,000 feet above sea level. That's getting on for the ascent as great as that of the Cairngorms. You need to understand that to appreciate fully the lesson. What then did they do after that when they ascended the plateau and had taken Ai and Bethel? They made their way northwards. If you had a map, I could show it to you. They made their way northwards to the border of Judea with Samaria to renew their covenant with God between those two mountains, Gerizim and Ebal, near where Joseph's body was sepulchred, and the famous well of Sychar, the woman of Samaria, you remember, is situated. Now, this morning, looking at my notes, and now I'm trying to remember the name of the city that's set there that's always in so much trouble. It starts with M. If anybody remembers it, shout it out. N. Nablus. That's right. Poor old man. Nablus. Nablus. That's right. That, watch every reference to Nablus, because that's this location here. And it's where Joseph's body was was laid in a sepulchre, and you can see the sepulchre to this day, and you can go to the Greek church that is built over the well, and you can have a drink of the water. It's the coolest water you ever drank from the well. And it's the well that not only Jesus sat on, but Jacob built 4,000 years ago. And the stones of that well have to be banded with iron to keep them together. And I think that's the most authentic site in the whole of the Holy Land. And I don't know that you can go to it now, it's so dangerous, but there it is. But why did Israel go away up there, about 20 miles north of Ai and Bethel? Well, for the rest of this morning, I'm going to be reading the Bible. I hope you don't object to that. If you do, I'll deal with you. The answer to that, why did they go up there, is found in Deuteronomy chapter 27. Now, I'm not going to read Deuteronomy 27, but I'm going to describe it, and you can look at it if you like, or just listen. It will practically explain all and give the answer to why they went up there. Large stones, when they reached the place, large stones were to be plastered over. Verse 2. The law was to be written on these stones. Verse 3. And the stones were to be set up on Mount Ebal. That's to the north of this gorge, between the two mountains. Mount Gerizim is where the Samaritans have their temple, still have it, I think. But Mount Ebal on the left, as you're approaching, to the north. Mount Ebal, then, set up on Mount Ebal, verse 4. They were also to build an altar of uncut stones for sacrificial offerings, and then they were to eat and rejoice, verses 6 to 8. Then the tribes of Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, Benjamin were to be set on Mount Gerizim to the left, looking this way, that is to the south, to bless. You see, verse 12. While the tribes of Reuben, the eldest, but who sinned, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, were to curse. Verse 13. The Levites were to pronounce the following curses: against images, 15. Against dishonoring parents, 16. Against moving neighbors' boundary stones, 17. Against leading the blind astray, verse 18. Against withholding justice from people, verse 19. Against incest with a stepmother, 20. With a beast, 21. With a stepsister, 22. With a mother-in-law, 23. Against killing a neighbor secretly, 24, or accepting a bribe to kill the innocent, 25, against everyone who does not uphold the word of this by carrying them out, 26. Now, let me begin to read at 28. And this is what we read there. If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all his commandments that I give you today, that's the day that we're standing there between the mountains, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on the earth. All these blessings will come upon you and accompany you if you obey the Lord your God. You will be blessed in the city and blessed in the country. The fruit of your womb will be blessed, and the crops of your land and the young of your livestock, the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flock. Your basket and your kneading trough will be blessed. You will be blessed when you come in and blessed when you go out. The Lord will grant that the enemies who rise up against you will be defeated before you. They will come at you from one direction but flee from you in seven. The Lord will send a blessing on your barns and everything you put your hand to. The Lord your God will bless you in the land he is giving you. The Lord will establish you as his holy people, as he promised you on oath, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. Then all the peoples on earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they will fear you. A godly Israel would make the Arabs afraid. And a godly church would make all sinful people afraid. That's what it's saying. Read it again. Then all the peoples on earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they will fear you. The Lord will grant you abundant prosperity in the fruit of your womb, the young of your livestock, and the crops of your ground, in the land he swore to your forefathers to give you. A little bit more. I'm not going to read it all, it's about 68 verses, but I'm going to read a few. The Lord will open the heavens, the storehouse of his bounty, to send rain on your land in season and to bless all the work of your hands. You will lend to many nations, but will borrow from none. You won't need to borrow. The Lord will make you the head, not the tail. If you pay attention, T-A-I-L, of course, if you pay attention to the commands of the Lord your God that I give you this day and carefully follow them, you will always be at the top, never at the bottom. Isn't that wonderful? Do not turn aside from any of the commandments I give you today, to the right or to the left, following other gods and serving them. However, if you do not obey the Lord your God and do not carefully follow all his commands and decrees I am giving you today, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. You will be cursed in the city and cursed in the country. Your basket and your kneading trough will be cursed. The fruit of your womb will be cursed, and the crops of your land and the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flock. You will be cursed when you come in, and you will be cursed when you go out. Verse 38. You will sow much seed in the field, but you will harvest little, because locusts will devour it. You will plant vineyards and cultivate them, but you will not drink the wine or gather the grapes, because worms will eat them. You will have olive trees throughout your country, but you will not use the oil, because the olives will drop off. You will have sons and daughters, but you will not keep them, because they will go into captivity. Swarms of locusts will take over all your trees and the crops of your land. 45. All these curses will come upon you. They will pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed, because you did not obey the Lord your God and observe the commands and decrees he gave you. They will be a sign and a wonder to you and to your descendants forever. 49. The Lord will bring a nation against you from far away, from the ends of the earth, like an eagle swooping down, a nation whose language you will not understand, a fierce-looking nation without respect for the old or pity for the young. They will devour the young of your livestock and the crops of your land until you are destroyed. They will leave you no grain, new wine or oil, nor any calves of your herds or lambs of your flocks until you are ruined. They will lay siege to all the cities throughout your land until the high fortified walls in which you trust fall down. They will besiege all the cities throughout the land, and the land that the Lord your God is giving you. 58. If you do not carefully follow all the words of this law which are written in this book, and do not revere this glorious and awesome name, the Lord your God, the Lord will send fearful plagues on you and your descendants, harsh and prolonged disasters, and severe and lingering illnesses. 60. He will bring upon you all the diseases of Egypt that you dreaded, and they will cling to you. The Lord will also bring on you every kind of sickness and disaster not recorded in this book of the law until you are destroyed. You, who were as numerous as the stars in the sky, will be left but few in number, because you did not obey the Lord your God, just as it pleased the Lord to make you prosper and increase in number, so it will please him to ruin and destroy you. You will be uprooted from the land you are entering to possess it. Well, 29. These are the terms of the covenant the Lord commanded Moses to make with the Israelites in Moab, in addition to the covenant he had made with them at Horeb, that is Sinai. Moses summoned all the Israelites and said to them, "Your eyes have seen all that the Lord did in Egypt to Pharaoh, to all his officials, and to all his land. With your own eyes you saw those great trials, those miraculous signs and great wonders. But to this day the Lord has not given you a mind that understands, or eyes that see, or ears that hear. During the 40 years that I led you through the desert, your clothes did not wear out, nor did the sandals on your feet. You ate no bread and drank no wine or other fermented drink. I did this so that you might know that I am the Lord your God. 14. I am making this covenant with its oath, not only with you who are standing here with us today in the presence of the Lord our God, but also with those who are not here today. You yourselves know how we lived in Egypt and how we passed through the countries on the way here. You saw among them their detestable images and idols of wood and stone and of silver and gold. Make sure that there is no man or woman, clan or tribe among you today whose heart turns away from the Lord our God to go and worship the gods of those nations. Make sure there is no root among you, O Esau, Esau, Esau. Make sure there is no root among you that produces such bitter poison. When such a person hears the words of this oath, he invokes a blessing on himself and therefore thinks, I will be safe even though I persist in going my own way. Oh, this will bring disaster on the watered land as well as the dry. The Lord will never be willing to forgive him. His wrath and zeal will burn against that man who says, I will be safe even though I persist in going my own way. All the curses written in this book will fall upon him, and the Lord will blot out his name from under heaven. The Lord will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for disaster, according to all the curses of the covenant written in this book of the law. The last verse of the chapter, before I read a little in 30. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. Now, 30. when all these blessings and curses I have said before you come upon you, and my goodness, history proves that they did come upon them. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. And you take them to heart wherever the Lord your God disperses you among the nations, captive in Soviet Russia, for example. And when you and your children return to the Lord your God and obey him with all your heart and with all your soul according to everything I command you today, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where he scattered you. Even if you have been banished to the most distant land under the heavens, from there the Lord your God will gather you and bring you back. He will bring you to the land that belonged to your fathers, and you will take possession of it. He will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. The Lord your God will this is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. This is the significance of baptism. Colossians 2 and 11. The Lord your God, 6, the Lord your God will circumcise your hearts, not outward rites of water and knives and bread and wine. No, 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 no. The Lord will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants so that you may love him with all your heart and with all your soul and live. Verse 11. Now, he says, what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven so that you have to ask, who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask, who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so that you may obey it. See. Now you see, that written so long ago only came fully true when Jesus came and went and sent his Spirit at Pentecost to indwell the hearts of every believer. What a verse that is. The word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so that you may obey it. See, he says, I said before you today, life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. And verse 19 and 20, this day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God and listen to his voice and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life. And he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your father.